Hello, all my friends. This is Chris Bell and the Chris Bell Podcast with Ridge Faith Community. And first of all, can you hear that? I don't know if you can hear that or not, but I normally shut everything down when I go to record an episode. And what you have to know is, as I most often do this in my clubhouse, that there's not air conditioning in the clubhouse. No AC in the old chapel, except for a little portable unit that I can run every once in a while. And I normally shut that off while I record so that it doesn't have background noise and the such. But today, Richmond is heading towards a heat index of like 110 degrees with 1,000% humidity or something like that. And I just have to let it run or I will melt by the time I finish. So if there is some of that in the background, that is me trying to survive and thrive as we talk today. Anyway, a lot of cool things coming up. We just finished a great Father's Day weekend at the Ridge, and it was pretty cool. You may notice there is a previous podcast to this that's up. It's protected. We did some things as part of our community at the Ridge that really just is for us, but we had folks traveling and the such because it was Father's Day. So it is up there for people from the Ridge only, and don't worry about that. That'll happen from time to time because sometimes, you know, yeah, just got to be a family, and we did that. So today we are going to dive into a concept of Father's Day on this episode, which I am calling Tanks, Teddy Bears, Stetsons, Knives, and Other Cool Things. I like that title. So Father's Day is a bittersweet day for a lot of people, just like Mother's Day is. For some of us, we love Dad, and maybe Dad is still around, but he is changing, and that causes some emotions for us. Or for some of us, we've lost Dad, and a good or bad relationship, the passing of that icon is always huge. For others of us, Dad wasn't anybody to ever be emulated, and gone or not, it's bittersweet just because, wow, there are still some feelings or memories or things that we have worked through already in dealing with Dad. But for most people, Father's Day is a mixed bag. And so we approach that with that sensitivity and celebrating the fact that we all come from somewhere and we all have a dad, whether we knew him or not. And it's important for us to talk today about that concept of fatherhood, because right now we have maleness under the microscope in our culture, and so rightfully so. I talked in a previous episode that I don't even know if it made the podcast page or not. I maybe need to record that, come to think of it. But I talked about the concept of a divine masculine and sacred feminine concept, that there is a history through wisdom literature, and there is a body of ancient future knowledge that encompasses this concept of a divine masculine and sacred feminine, is what those qualities are that make us male and female when done right, when done with peace and wisdom and an idea of preserving a culture. But when the divine masculine goes off the rails and takes a left turn off the freeway, we see the coercion and the power abuses and all the things that are being spoken about right now in our culture. So it is fitting that we talk about this concept of fatherhood and maleness at this time. Now, first of all, as I always say on Mother's Day as well as Father's Day, if I ever talk about these kind of things, ladies listening, praising something about a male quality is not denigrating the same thing in a woman. Similarly, if I praise a quality of women, how they balance us and bring wisdom and they do, you know, good things like that, is not a slam against men with the implication that they don't have those qualities. I think that's important to say at the beginning of this because of where we are in our conversation in our culture regarding gender equality and differences and the abuses that have happened and all those good things. And it is good that we are in our culture trying to remedy and bring some justice to some of the twisted and wicked abuses of power and expressions of maleness. By the way, wicked, you know, often thought of as evil, comes from the same root word as wicker, and which means twisted. So if you have a wicked concept of maleness, that means something has gotten twisted along the way. And when that happens, we see the ugliness and the bad side of maleness that so many in our culture are currently working to expose and correct. But so many of us may have experienced that brings some of the bittersweetness of Father's Day talk. So this morning I am speaking as a man to men and women of the idea of maleness, of the divine masculinity, and how we get to that. Because we don't want maleness, masculinity, to get twisted and get off the rails. We want it balanced and peace-loving and all those good things that make it that way. So as we explore what this means to be a male on Father's Day, or what our role is, we're going to recall that this is all about a balance, and this is all about a give and a take, and nobody has this figured out, and we all come from a place of hurt, and we have all made these mistakes, and we are all working, we hope, towards this goal. So as I start off with, something that is true for both fathers and mothers, men and women, is we have to have an idea of where we are headed, particularly as we raise children, lead a community, interact with other people. What is our job? And that's a big, broad question. But I recently had a talk with my motorcycle club at a national meeting that we conducted, and I defined our job in a particular way. We're going to repeat here, and I would say that same thing holds true for men in general, as well as women, but again, I'm speaking as a man and to men and women this morning. And that is, our job is to embody the vision of what we want this culture, this family, this child, this person to be. We have to embody the vision of what being a good man is. We have to live that out, know what it is, pursue it, chase after it. Nobody gets there in their entirety, but we have to embody that. And we do that by living from a place of values and making our decisions based upon those. We also have to, number two, protect the culture that we are creating, protect our people, protect the culture that we create as a family unit, as a club, as a community, whatever that is. We are creating a culture, because when you run the values that you hold through the mission and vision that you have for your life, you create a culture, and it is definitely part of every parent's job, but as a man speaking to men, it is part of our job to protect the culture that we are trying to create, because the news and politics and advertising and schools and peer pressure and everything is trying to change the culture that we have. That's the definition, to lead us to better examples, in some cases to manipulate us to thing, and we are charged with protecting that culture. And then finally, the last thing, and this is just to set, again, a baseline of what we are doing, our job is to tell the story of who we are, and to help tell the story of the people we are raising and influencing, help them tell their own story, help them find their voice so that they know the story from which they come, to give them an origin story. One of the most important parts about fatherhood, for example, is helping young people find their voice, find their story, and be able to articulate their story in a way that helps shape the rest of their life. And so our job as fathers is to embody the vision of what it means to be a good man. Set a goal, give a mark, a flawed one. We all know that. I mean, holy smokes. But to embody that vision. Secondly, to protect the culture that you are creating, to create a safe place for the people around you to find their culture and experience it. And then finally, to tell your own story and then help those people around you tell their story, find their voices as they become who they are becoming. Now, a few things. what I did was I attempted to come up with something we could remember and think about. So if maybe as you're walking down the street or going through life over the next day or two, some things will jog your ideas, your mind, your memory of some of the things that I'm trying to speak to you about. Because being a father, being a man, is difficult. It's always been difficult. And I know I get pushback from women that how could it possibly be difficult? There have been abuses, and that is entirely correct, and I totally give you that. But being a woman is difficult. Being a man is difficult. I can relate as a man to men that sometimes there is no model of what it means to be a man. There is some old models that may not work anymore. There are some new ones that have not been tested. And every time you turn around, somebody's critiquing the model that you're currently looking at as no longer valid. And it can feel like that if you are a man who is trying or that you are engaged in a struggle of trying to work with your mistakes and with your all the, but that it feels like the concept of man, the concept of maleness, can feel like it's under attack. Not that it is necessarily, but when the models that you have keep being stripped down and you're lost and not knowing which way is north for what it means to be a man, to be male, to fill a role, that can be confusing and it can cause animosity. And it's part of the reason I think you see some of the fundamentalist pushback that we are experiencing so much of in our culture. So just a few ideas of what it means to be a man on this Father's Day. Okay, the first is a concept that I developed a long time ago that I use a lot when I consult with people and talk. And men feel a constant struggle of being the old-fashioned tough guy, provider, rock, protector, which is still there. Men are the ones required to serve in the military in times of distress. It is mostly men who die on the job. The most dangerous, the top 10 most dangerous jobs in America are almost always overwhelmingly males. And that doesn't mean that women shouldn't do those things, but the culture is still that. Men are often seen as the protectors. We die first very often because of a lot of those factors. And so men struggle with, am I to be this provider, protector, tough guy, if you will, or am I supposed to be the soft and fuzzy support system that, you know, and a lot of guys are torn up because they feel like they're supposed to be both, and the skill sets to be both are not always embodiable in the same person. I call this tanks and teddy bears. And here's what I would love to say about that. Some people are born more tank-like. And if you think about a tank is hard steel, cold or very warm in the sun. It's got sharp edges. It's got multiple big guns. It makes lots of noise. It belches smoke. It's not real easy to cuddle with a tank. You could do it. You could put a blanket and a pillow up on it, and you could try your best. Soldiers have slept on tanks forever. But tanks aren't really good for helping people feel better about their emotions and you know, being cuddly and stuff like that. However, when the enemies are pouring over the hills of the village, a tank is really useful for defending the home and keeping people safe and doing those things that a tank does well. Conversely, a teddy bear. Teddy bear is about the epitome of comfort and cuddliness and all those things, and it can make children feel better. A lot of police officers and emergency first responders carry teddy bears to help children deal with big incidents. And if you want to cuddle, man, a teddy bear is the thing, and it's soft and cuddly, and it makes you feel better, and it's awesome. And some guys are built to be natural teddy bears. The only difficulty is teddy bears are not particularly great if there are invaders climbing the walls. You can chuck teddy bears at bad guys breaking into your house, and, you know, they may die of laughter, but other than that, they're not going to do a whole lot. And here's where this becomes important. Some men are naturally more teddy bear-like. They are they tend to be more sensitive and more emotionally focused and those kinds of things. And they're good at that. And they struggle when they are asked to be more tank-like. And somehow we have a concept that has formed that all men have to be both great tanks and great teddy bears, while other men are natural-born tanks, and that's how they operate. And they are good at the protection and at a traditional harder-edge view of things. Not that they are assholes. Sorry, that's the word that best fits. You don't have to be one of those to be a tank, but that's how they are wired. Those people will never be great teddy bears. Guys, you were born with, on a continuum, somewhere between 100% tank and 100% teddy bear. And where you were born, where you are, is your giftedness. That's who you are. Now, anybody who does business coaching will tell you, leadership coaching, for example, you can work on your weaknesses, but you're only going to change them a few percent. The idea is to work on your strengths and develop what you're good at and try to delegate or move around what you are not so good at. Well, if you are a tank, you are only going to be so teddy bear-like. You be a nice tank. You be a fun tank. You be a smiley tank, but you're going to be built like a tank. If you're a teddy bear, that is your role. You have teddy bear tendencies. You and Teddy Ruxpin, where did that come from? Those are the things that you do naturally well. You are never going to be able to build tank-like qualities. You can be a firm teddy bear. You can be one that can take a good stand and those things. Don't, fellas, don't be ashamed of who you are. There are guys that have fought their entire life because they are more teddy bear-like to be tanks because they get made fun of, or their partners tell them, boy, you need to man up, and how come you can't do it like this, or whatever. They feel pressure that they're supposed to be tank-like because that's being a man. Ha ha ha. Well, let that go. If you're a teddy bear, be a teddy bear. Work on also providing and protecting and all those other kind of things, but accept that teddy bear quality. And for the record, nobody is 100% anything. We are all a mix. But find out who you are, accept that, work on your strengths, and buffer against your weaknesses. Likewise, if you are a tank, you are only ever going to be so cuddly. That's just how it is. We have created a myth that a man has to be perfect at both and be able to pull both out of a hat and do both well, which is asinine and does not work. We can learn to adapt, and we can learn to be tanks that are kind or teddy bears that are firm, but we're always going to be doing that from the base of who we are. So guys, if you're listening to this, find some freedom, find some hope, relax into who you are, because there's nothing worse than going through life fighting who you are, right? So tanks and teddy bears, first of all, understand who you are, understand the strengths of who you are, and go accordingly. Nobody asked you to be everything in your world. Next, I just put a Stetson on my head, a Stetson cowboy hat. I love hats. I have a bunch of them, and I do. I love Westerns, and I love that genre. I love Reed, Louis L'Amour, and I own several Stetsons. And I can put this on my head if I'm going to hear a friend of mine play who leads a country band, or if I'm relaxing. I have one made of straw that I tend to wear on a vacation. I put that hat on at the right time. As part of this concept with the tanks and the teddy bears, men, we have to learn when to switch hats. We work and again, this is not exclusively to men, of course not, but I am a man talking to men because of affinity, and so here I go. We work and we come home and we do a 10, 12, 14-hour day, and we're working with employees, or we're working with a boss, and we're hauling rock, or we're putting out fires, or we're teaching, or we're working in a lab, or we're speaking, or whatever it is that we do. And we come home, and there are people in our community, maybe a family, maybe a faith community, maybe whatever it is, there are people that need us. We have to be able to switch hats and have the wisdom to know when to put the hat on of coach and when to put the hat on of father and spouse, when to put the hat on of listener. Oh man, how many of us need to work on that? Just put the hat on and listen and don't try to fix, because we do like to fix things, don't we, guys? We put the hat on of teacher. We put the hat on of friend. And knowing when to switch roles is an art form that, guys, we tend to do less well than our female friends. And it doesn't matter to me, guys, if you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, a wife or a mom or a child or whoever it is, they need you to be able to switch hats well. Now, here's the key to that. You have to know which hats you own. I have to know. I have a hat rack. Actually, I have a couple of them by my front door, and I have these rows of hats with a tomahawk hanging between them, just to be honest, because I'm a tank. But it kind of looks cool. I always like picking, but row of hats, and there's ball caps, and there's old Dilby caps, and there's fedoras, and there's Stetsons, and there's all these things, and I have to know which hats I have to be able to select which one is right. If I am going to go mow the yard, a buffalo pelt Stetson is probably not the right choice, but a ball cap with an absorbent line, that works great. And so I pick the hat for the task. We have to know how we function. We have to be aware who listens to us, who looks at us, fellas, and be able to switch. Just because we had a day at work where we had to deal with a numbskull boss or an idiot employee, or we had a frustrating day, does not mean we get to keep that hat on as we engage with people in other roles. We have to be able to learn to switch those hats. Now, that is difficult, and it's a lifetime effort. And again, we tend to do this particular task not as well as some of our female counterparts, but we can do it, and we should do it, because a man, not as opposed to a woman, but as opposed to a boy, a man is somebody who recognizes how many people are affected by the actions that he takes, by the decisions that he makes. And being able to make that hat switch is necessary. Okay? Now that hat comes off. Now, next, what I'm holding here in my hand is a knife, and this knife is probably about, I don't know, 18, 20 inches long. And it's in a sheath made of water buffalo hide, actually. And this knife is called a kukri, and it's from the nation of Nepal. And their Gurkha warriors carry these. It's a very famous blade if you know knives. I love knives. I dabble in making some of them. I collect them. I teach people how to use them. Anyway, this is a kukri, and it's shiny stainless steel. It's got a little bend in it. And it was made for me in Nepal. Well, this knife started out as an old leaf spring in, from what I'm told, is a World War II era Jeep. And an old rusted out Jeep has a leaf spring, you know, a big piece of steel. And for those of you that don't know what leaf springs are, they're overlapping pieces of metal that are kind of look like rainbow shape that compress down and act as a suspension. It's an older style suspension system often used in trucks and things like that. And this leaf spring was an old rusty piece of steel. And somebody turned it into this beautiful and dangerous knife. Now, this knife is sharp. If I drew it across my skin, it would cut me. But to be honest with you... oh, wow, pardon me. To be honest with you, that knife is worthless if it's not sharp. What good is a dull knife? A knife is good and is worthwhile because it is dangerous. Well, how do you go from being a rusted-out leaf spring in a World War II era Jeep to becoming a weapon, something to cut your food with, something to protect yourself with? Well, first of all, anybody ever seen Forged in Fire? I love that show. It's a great show about people making knives as hobbies and making money off of them sometimes too. But you start by putting that leaf spring in a forge, in a really hot fire, and you get that metal heated up to the point where it glows white hot. When you apply that much heat to metal, the molecules in the metal change, and the metal becomes pliable. And then once that metal becomes pliable, you smack it really hard with a big hammer. And by hitting that metal, you shape it from the natural condition in which it is into the shape of a knife. And then you quench that metal by drastically reducing its temperature and putting it through a rapid change and to harden that steel. And then finally, you take files or a grinder to it to put an edge on it to make it fine. You take away that material, which is not a sharp knife, to make out the sharp knife appear. That process, gentlemen, is the perfect picture of how we are formed into something useful, how men become something dangerous. And I say dangerous with an asterisk. It's in a good way. I'm not talking about abusive. I'm not talking about coercive. I'm not talking about being that kind of guy. I'm talking about a dangerous man as somebody who can change the world, has dangerous love and dangerous strength and dangerous hope. Martin Luther King Jr. was dangerous to the status quo. Abraham Lincoln was dangerous to the status quo. Every man has their faults. Every man has their demons. But to be dangerous, to be world-changing, requires us. The first is nobody is dangerous who has not been put through heat, has not had trial and tribulation and stress accumulate till the very molecules of who they are change. Their temperament changes. Their color changes as the heat is applied, and that heat makes people more pliable and bendable. And then when it's hot and we just don't know if we can take it anymore, that's when the hammer falls, and God or life or people around us, whatever you tend to think, hammer blows begin to fall, and it begins to change us and shape us and drive us into something from just a natural, raw, useless piece of steel into something as a tool, something that's dangerous, something that's worthwhile, something that impacts people. And those hammer blows hurt. Particularly when we're already overheated, but that is what shapes us into becoming something useful. No leader gets to become a leader without suffering. Everybody suffers to change us into who we need to be. When what we do with our suffering and with our pain is what determines who we are and what we become. So the heat happens, the hammer blows happen, and then there is a quenching. There is a sudden cooling off or a sudden hardening, and there's everything around us seems to change. The very aspect of who we are changes, and that's what allows us to take on a useful edge. And then we're in dire periods of grinding down and filing, where stuff that is not good for our task is taken away, is whittled off, and we are honed and brought to a razor's edge so that we can be useful for what it is we have to do. Now, guys, as I hold this kukri and I look at it, somebody put it through this entire process to turn it into a knife that's worthwhile and good and useful, and I can use this to do a lot of good things. Guys, if we resist the heat, if we resist the hammer blows, if we push off of the quenching, or we do not allow what is not part of us, part of our mission, to be stripped away from us, we stay a useless piece of steel, when what we have to do is embrace that process, trust whatever it is that is guiding the forging process, and allow ourselves to be forged into something good and useful and meaningful and dangerous. And that is how we will love the people around us better. That is how we will care for the people around us better. That's how we will have the divine masculine bringing justice and health and wholeness to the world, and not showing the abuses of what happens when a tank goes awry or when raw steel has a fit, because we have been honed into something good. Now, to continue, a lot of us who are listening, guys, if you are listening right now, take a look. There's a good chance, if you look down at your hands, some of you have a ring on, okay? I'm wearing one right now, actually. I have a club ring that I wear on my left ring finger. I'm a divorced man, and I do have this ring that I wear there for a lot of reasons, but one of them is this commitment that I have made to these group of brothers as part of this club. A lot of times anymore, people wear rings and they don't mean anything. Of course, we have wedding rings, and people wear a wedding ring to communicate all kinds of things. Some people have rings that are special because they were given to them by folks they care about or whatever. But rings have traditionally meant something, some sort of significance or role or status. The old Hebrew Bible story of the prodigal son, when the son comes back, the father says, "Let me give you a robe and rings for your fingers." That signifies that the sonship and the possession and position that he has as part of that family. Well, our job, fellas, is to wear rings and give rings. And here's what I mean. Having a ring is a position, a symbol. This is where I am, where I belong. This is a statement that I'm making, and we need to do that. But we also need to give those rings. our culture right now is very, very different in many respects, but in this one particular one, from most of human history up till now. Most cultures have a rite of passage for a boy becoming a man, also for a girl becoming a woman, but hence a guy talking to men on Father's Day. I'm talking about the rite of passage of a boy becoming a man. And it's something that is said, you've made it. You've demonstrated to the tribe or to the elders or to a council or to a select group of men that you have what it takes. You are no longer a boy. You are now a man. We used to have that in this culture up until not very long ago with military service or with, you know, various stages in life. We don't have that anymore. And a lot of men hunger deep down inside themselves for somebody to tell them, you've made it. You have what it takes. You've been tested and found worthy. Now, again, for what I pour myself into besides the Ridge and my business and is this motorcycle club, we have that. You prospect for a while. You try to earn your stripes. And for us, that can be one too many years. But there come a point where you earn the patch of our club. And when you do that, that means that unanimously a group of men have said, yeah, he's ready, he's there, he's part of this brotherhood, he's made it. And then we have a process that we do that where we, as you get a new patch, we line you up and we tack that patch on. And we don't beat anybody up, but everybody gets one shot to drive that patch into that new brother's back. And yeah, guys need some Advil. And, you know, again, we don't kill anybody, but they feel it. And I am told again and again and again by the brothers that is one of the best traditions that we have, because they're being affirmed that there's a group of people that say, yes, you're one of us and you've proved yourself. And there's this little ritual and little deal that we go through that shows you that, and you'll carry bruises from it for a few days and need a little Advil, and that means something. We don't have that much anymore. Guys, it is our job to help our sons and our daughters, the people we mentor, the people we coach. We have to create something that lets them know, here's a ring for your finger. You are doing it. You have done it. You have made it. You've accomplished this next step. Because part of helping people tell their story is helping them to have the steps they need to get from point A to point B, to let them know that somebody above them, somebody next to them, somebody coaching them, somebody they trust has said, yes, you did it. You made it. Let's celebrate. Here is who you are and how you are. We have to wear rings and give rings, gentlemen, to help people around us make it. Okay? Next, I take out of my pocket right now a flashlight. And I know for some of you are like, what? Who does that? Well, the people that I hang around with, we look at everybody else and go, why aren't they carrying flashlights? I use this thing like a million times a day. And there's a couple settings on it, actually. I can depress this tail cap just a little bit, and I get a general soft lighting that's useful for finding things in the dark and etc. Or I can depress this button a little harder, and I get 1,200 lumens of light. And 1,200 lumens of light is almost a level of force. I hit that in your eyes, and you're not going to see right for a while, and it makes a physical reaction in you, etc. There's two uses I have for this light. Starting with the latter, is it is a tactical level of force. If you're going to attack me or try to hurt me or do anything, and it's at all a low-light condition, I put this in your eyes. It allows me to move. It allows me to do things. Intense light can be blinding, and that's important. As guys, we are there for illumination and helping as men to boys and as to our partners and all these other kind of things. Sometimes, in a protection role, we have to be able to be intense enough to be able to create that effect, and we have to be able to turn it on or off. And you know, we used to call this idea gravitas, that when you show up in the room, you know, the old movie stars or whatever show up in a room and they could just feel you were there, and people knew you were there, and they could feel it. We have to be able to bring that to the table. But also, on the softer setting of this light, I can put it on the floor and not stub my toes on things and find things that are lost. And, you know, the Hebrew Bible says that this wisdom that we get is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. If you illuminate a whole room with ceiling lights, you pretty much can see everything, okay? But if you're working by flashlight, all you can see is where you put your next step, where you put your foot down next. Guys, we do not have to know the path that our kids are going to take from the get-go, how our lives are going to end up. But we are supposed to help them know, here's your next step. Here's the flashlight in front of you. Here, let's try this step. How about you take this step? You seem hopeless. There's always a next step. Let me show you what the next step is. And that comforting teddy bear-like quality of being able to help illuminate the next step for people is extremely masculine and extremely good. But we also have to be able to ramp that up when necessary with intensity and use that as a force of nature. And that's a good thing. Okay? Another thing a lot of you have, maybe you're sitting on it driving right now, or it's in your pocket as you're out for a walk or whatever else, is a wallet. Guys, I know a lot of us carry a wallet. Well, what is in there? What's in there? What's the two most important things in that wallet? Money and ID, probably, right? Again, not exclusive to women, but as an adult male as opposed to a boy, not as opposed to a woman, it is our job to both provide and to establish identity. We provide for people around us. Generosity is one of the key components of the divine masculine, and providing for ourselves and the people around us, that is what we do. You know, the old Chris Rock routine about football players who say, thanks, Mom. He said he would love to see some of them say, hey, Dad, thanks for all that light, and thanks for knocking out that rent and all those things. That's part of our job, and we should do that. Again, just to make sure you don't hear what I'm not saying, not instead of or exclusive of women, this is men versus boys, not men versus women, okay? Provision is a huge part of it, and that's something we task ourselves with all our life. But also identity. You know that helping people find who they are is one of the chief responsibilities of any man. People you coach or mentor, children you raise, helping them know, here's who I am. Psychology today tells us, this is not something coming from religion, this is something coming from modern psychology. Psychologists today, that so much of a child's identity comes from the male influence in a traditional parenting relationship. Now, non-traditional, there are divine masculine influences even through feminine attributes. So if you have a two-mom household, for example, you're still going to get, if things are working right, some divine masculine attributes that are coming through. And that's what I am speaking of as an example, that helping people know, here's who I am. I've made it. This is who I am. This is who I'm not. Finding so many people are lost at 25, 30, 35, 40, even 50, 60 years old because they don't know who they are. And more on that to come in further episodes, actually. But that is our job, to provide provision and identity. And we have to do it for ourselves before we can do it for others. Okay, where am I at? I'm running out of time here, I think. I want to be able to... So let's do this. One more, all right? If you reach into your pocket or in your briefcase or something right now, probably one last thing that you have are keys. Now, I have this little thing I carry called a key bar. It's like a jackknife for keys. It keeps everything locked in together. And what do keys do? Keys unlock locks or lock locks. They manipulate locks. You can lock a door, unlock a door. You control access. You can open a door for somebody that needs it and give them access to something that's going to help them tremendously. Men, that is our job. On the other side of that, conversely, a key locks a door and keeps the people on the other side of the door safe, or on this side of the door safe. It denies access to the wrong people as well. So we have to know the art of when to open doors and when to close them, when to unlock and when to lock. And if we carry the keys, gentlemen, it is our responsibility, and it is a sacred responsibility, to know when to lock some things down and when to open some doors. And generally, opening doors for people is a huge, important, vital part of being a man. And also knowing when to lock some down too. And by the way, when you go home, you kind of have an idea. If somebody knocks on your door, you have an idea, don't you, of when to open the door, when to close it, when to lock it, when to unlock it. That kind of stuff is intuitive. It isn't always that easy, but it is oftentimes, so don't overthink it. But yeah, guys, we carry the keys to the unlocking of potential and to the protection and locking down of some bad influences. Huh? Father's Day is complex, and we have bittersweet things with our own dads, don't we? I mean, that's part of my own story. And every man's job is to embody the vision of who it means to be a good man, both for ourselves and the people around us, and to protect the culture that we are creating, the people in that culture, and to provide some stability. And finally, to tell the story, tell our story, and help those people around us tell their stories, because that's what matters and that's what's important. Helping folks embody that vision, protect that culture, and tell that story is one of the base definitions of what it means to be a man today. And so when there are so many examples of masculinity going off the rails and dropping into being just a jerky tank or a worthless teddy bear, we have to be able to know, discern, implement the divine masculine attributes. To understand I've messed up in the past. To learn from them, move forward. To own what we do and then keep going. And to embody that vision, protect that culture, and tell that story in all the ways that we talked about. Whether you're a tank or a teddy bear, and whatever hat you happen to be wearing, to be able to endure the forging process to become something dangerous, to wear and give rings appropriately, to be a light for those around us, encouraging the next step and being with the intensity and gravitas when it's needed to shape the vision of the people around us, to provide both provision and ID, and to know when to lock and unlock doors. Guys, that's just stuff we carry around with us because that's stuff we carry around with us. It's not easy. It's important, and it's dangerous work, and every single one of you can do it. You can start where you are. You don't need anything else. You already have everything you need to start your journey from where you are, to step up and to pursue what it means to being a good man with the attributes of the divine masculine. And if your dad didn't do it well, do it better. And if your dad did it great, do like he did. And if there's people around you that you've hurt, say it, own it, make it right. Don't do it more, but move forward. Do not let the charge that others have hurt or you have hurt in your past stop you from improving and growing and being what this world needs, which are men that are good and they know who they are, tank or teddy bear, and they move forward to impact the world in dangerous and good ways to change us, to make us better, to give us hope, to show us next steps. Fellas, it is time to stand up. It is time to do better, and we can do it. A belated happy Father's Day to everybody who hears me. And ladies, if you know men who need this, pass this along. And thank you for being the strength behind all of us guys, because all the weeds need the flowers. And so much of what you bring to the table is what we need to emulate. Thank you for that. Now, to all of you friends, grace and peace, and thank you for putting up with my air conditioning sounds, because I'm about to melt. I will see you at the next episode. Grace and peace, everybody. Bye-bye.